Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not so old. And this week, just for a change, my partner in crime, Chris English, and I are presenting the programme together. So over to you, Chris. Perhaps you can tell us what's coming up in your part of the programme.
Well, thank you very much, Richard, and it's good to be with you together. We're not normally that close, Chris, we do the programmes independently.
Well, you should say, Chris, we're not usually this close together in terms of voices, but I don't want to give the impression that we're breaking the lockdown. We're actually both sitting at home and communicating via Zoom. So we're certainly not breaking the lockdown. We're many miles apart, even though we sound as if we're in the same studio.
I've been talking to a radio and television doctor, Sarah Jarvis, and she's been telling us about test and trace and what you can do and what you can't do, and whether you need to go out and buy a posh new telephone. The answer to that is no. And she's also talking about stop smoking and the importance of flu jabs. So that's coming up for me, together with a rather special interview with a chap called David Lowe, who actually writes television theme music. And he'll demonstrate to us how he put a very special and well-known item together. Back to you, Richard.
Thanks, Chris. Inevitably, this edition of the programme is very much tied up with the current coronavirus pandemic. But that item from Chris about the TV theme tunes should at least lighten the mood a bit and help us to remember there's something else in the world other than COVID-19. I'm going to be conducting two interviews, which again are on the subject of COVID-19. One is about the fact that small businesses in particular are suffering from the reduced trade that's produced by the pandemic. And it's a question of what can be done about it, both by the people who are running the business and by their customers. Also, many older people who've been furloughed over the past few months are worrying about whether, when the furlough scheme finishes, they'll actually lose their jobs, and the knock-on effect that might have on their pension savings. And I've got an interview again on the subject of what can be done about that. So that's all coming up in this edition of At Home This Morning. Right, back to you, Chris, to introduce your first item.
As the number of positive cases of COVID-19 rises in England and Wales, it's vital that we do all we can to prevent the spread of infection. And joining us by Zoom, Dr. Sarah Jarvis. Good morning.
Good morning.
And tell me, is this the new test and trace app?
So it's the track and trace app, yep, the NHS COVID-19 app. And it's part of the NHS test and trace service and the NHS Wales test, trace, protect service. So it's just for people in England and Wales, because Scotland and Northern Ireland have got their own apps, Protect Scotland app and the Stop COVID NI app.
So how does it work?
It's very clever, is the answer. I'm not a natural with technology. I'm afraid my children are a great deal better at technology than I am. But basically, what it does is it does several things. The first thing is it tells you if you're at risk of coronavirus because you've been in close contact with someone who has tested positive, and it asks you to isolate before you potentially pass the virus on to others. If you have symptoms, you can then use this to order a test, although that's done external to the app. And we'll come on to that because privacy is really important here. You can book a test, and then it will send the results of the test back to you. But in addition, you can also, for instance, check into venues using an inbuilt QR code scanner, which sounds terribly complicated, but it's one of those square things with pretty pictures, as my children point out to me. And businesses can be required by law to display NHS QR codes in all venues. It also allows you to test to check the alert levels in your area by postcode. It asks the only personal information it will ask of you is the first half of your postcode, so N14 or SN10, for instance, not the whole of your postcode. So it doesn't know where you are. It uses Bluetooth, not GPS, so it doesn't track where you are. It's low energy Bluetooth, so it doesn't drain your battery. There aren't the same compatibility problems, for instance, we've had with iPhone, although one glitch that has been identified is it doesn't work with older iPhones. I'm not sure how much older. But it also works as long as your phone is on and Bluetooth is on, even if your phone is locked.
Right, it's all very clever. A lot of our listeners are in the older category, as am I, and they not necessarily have some form of iPhone or one of the other similar devices. So what happens to them?
So actually nothing changes for them because we still have got the NHS test and trace system. And basically, if you have symptoms, you order a test through the gov.uk website in exactly the same way as you would before. You get your test. And if you haven't got a smartphone, then the contact tracing people will phone you and they will ask you about people you've been in close contact with and they'll get in touch with them. So there are also, for instance, other systems, handwritten registers that have to be maintained for visitors who don't have smartphones.
So we don't need to encourage our listeners to go out and spend lots of money that perhaps they haven't got on things like
that. Absolutely not. I'm not suggesting that everyone should go out and spend however many hundred pounds it is to get one of these smartphones. But what I am saying is if you've got one, I was initially a little bit wary because, as we know, there were significant problems with the original version of Test and Trace, not least that it was centralised, so some people were worried about privacy, but also there are all sorts of glitches about it draining your battery and so on. Those have all been overcome with this. And I have to say, I think this is a fantastic tool. It's incredibly simple to use. But if you don't have it, if you don't have a smartphone, no, don't go out and buy a smartphone just for this. But if you do have a smartphone, please do download it because it's really simple to use and it really can help.
And do you think we're seeing this long awaited and dreaded second wave?
I'm afraid I think we are definitely seeing a significant increase in cases. About 3 weeks ago, we had 2,000 cases a day, according to the pilot, which is where they test people randomly nationally to see if they're positive. A week later, it was 3,200 cases a day. And last week, it was 6,000 cases a day. So, yeah, I don't think there's any question that the cases are, as Chris Whitty and Chris Balance, the chief medical officer and the chief scientific advisor, said, I don't think there's any question that cases are at the moment doubling about every week to 10 days. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to go up as high as they did at the beginning of the year. And I think it's really important to remember, firstly, that most of the people who are currently infected are younger people. But we have seen in other countries that what starts with younger people can spread to older people as time goes on. But I think the other thing to bear in mind is that we're all much, much more aware of the precautions we need to take now than we were then. So I really do hope that things are not going to increase as rapidly as they did last time, because, you know, people weren't aware of social distancing. Shops, pubs, restaurants, other venues didn't have measures in place to reduce contamination as they do now. So, you know, I really do hope that by using all the measures at our disposal, so social distancing, isolating the moment you get symptoms until you've had a negative test, isolating if you're told you've been in contact with someone for 14 days, and then getting a test if you develop symptoms, using a face covering if you're in an area indoors where you can't socially distance, washing your hands really regularly, all of these things, this is part of the solution. It's not the solution, but from my perspective, I've waited a long time because I've long believed that this was going to be a major advance.
What do you say to those people that say, oh, I'm not going to bother with this, it's a load of nonsense, it's all about things like the new phone system with...
That's what I say to them. Yeah, that is just complete. And I mean, these conspiracy theories, they're flat earthers. It's just a complete and utter nonsense. We had the genetic code of this virus. The entire genetic code of this virus was sequenced in January this year in China and was sent out to every scientist in the world, made available freely to all of them so that we could develop vaccines. And there are now about 120 vaccine trials going on, about 20 of which are looking pretty good. So, you know, I think that we really have just got to, this is just complete, it's twaddle, isn't it? It's complete twaddle.
It's obviously rendered you speechless, these people. And presumably those same people will say, I'm not having a vaccine.
Of course they will. And more for them, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
The good news is that not everybody needs to get a vaccine for it to work, but we do need the vast majority of people to have one. We also know that, of course, while older people and people with underlying health conditions, such as, say, diabetes, people of the AME origin, people who are very overweight, people who have severe problems affecting their immunity, while they're much more likely to die, we have seen younger, relatively healthy people develop something called long COVID, which means even when you have fairly mild infections, you can end up with longer term problems.
So it's also the time for Stoptober, which is, of course, the campaign to stop or reduce cigarette smoking. And as At Home This Morning is aimed of our older listeners, as well as those not so old, of course, how important is it for our listeners to take heed of the advice? And perhaps even more importantly, is the campaign having any effect on the number of smokers?
We have seen from ASH, the Action on Smoking and Health, that over 1 million people in the UK quit smoking during the coronavirus lockdown. And that was even higher among younger people than it was among our mature colleagues. However, older people are managing to quit as well. And what's really important is it's never too late to quit. You can make improvements even if you've been smoking for life, even if you've got smoking-related lung disease.
Is it particularly prevalent at the moment when everybody's worrying about coronavirus?
Well, we do know that smoking damages your lungs and your airways, and it harms your immune system, making you more vulnerable to infections. Of course, we have had coronavirus this year, but we've also got flu season coming up. So smokers generally have an increased risk of getting respiratory infections. And if they do get them, they tend to get more severe symptoms. So it may well be that people are taking stock of what they need to do and where their priorities are. And I don't know what the reasons are. I suspect it may be something to do with that. But you know what? I don't care. I'm just delighted that the number of people making a quit attempt has increased from 29 to 35%. And really importantly, that the success rate has risen so much to nearly one in four smokers now who make a quit attempt manage to do it. That's what Stoptober is all about. If you can make it to 28 days smoke free, you're five times more likely to quit for good. And this year will be the year that Stoptober has generated over 2 million quit attempts across England since it began in 2012.
I mean, do you think people are becoming more aware of their health because of COVID? Or do you think it's just that the older people who have always smoked are dying out?
Well, I don't think there's any coincidence that we've had more people making quit attempts this year than any year in the past. So the number of calls to the National Smoke-Free Helpline increased by 40% this year compared to the same period in 2019. I don't have any specifics asking people, but certainly my patients are very much aware of their lung health now, perhaps in a way that they haven't been in the past.
You mentioned the flu season coming up. How important is it for older people to get a flu jab?
Oh, it has never been more important than it is this year. We don't know what would happen if you got flu and coronavirus at the same time, but we can entirely reasonably as doctors assume that the outcome would not be good. So it has never been more important. We know that we always get on average about 11,000 people die a year, and a huge number more than that are admitted to hospital. And that's just in England alone during flu season every year. If we get that spike in hospital admissions at the same time as we have a spike in hospital admissions due to COVID, then I don't think there's any question that there is a risk of the NHS being overwhelmed. Your single best protection against flu is to have the flu vaccine. So if you're over 65, if you have an underlying health condition, if you're pregnant, healthy children between the age of 2 and the end of the first year of primary school, all these groups are being invited for flu vaccination this year. And 50 to 64 year olds may be invited if there is enough vaccine once we've vaccinated all those other groups, but that wouldn't be until November or December. So please don't get in touch with your practice yet.
What about vaping? Because that's the new norm, isn't it, for people addicted to some kind of smoking?
Yeah, there have been lots of concerns about vaping. Is it a gateway drug getting people into smoking? Do people move on, start with vaping and move on to cigarettes? The evidence is not. And interestingly, it does appear to be a very successful way of helping people to stop smoking. The vast majority of people who vape do not smoke as well, and they do not go back to smoking. They certainly don't start with vaping. So while vaping is not known to be 100%, we don't know how safe it is. We certainly, however, do know that it's safer than smoking. And various academic bodies, bodies of doctors have come out and said that we estimate it's about 95% safer than smoking. But there are alternatives available. So, you know, if you go onto the Stoptober app, Stoptober's got a Facebook Messenger messenger bot. They've got a Faceline online community, and that's really important, getting support from other people who are going through the same thing. You can get daily emails. You can get an online personal quit tool that helps you find a combination of support that's right for you. So it could be vaping and a smoking cessation advisor. It could be alternatives like nicotine replacement. It could be short-term medication that reduces your urge to smoke. But whatever it is, if you search Stoptober, then you can get a full range of quitting support options.
And how can you find Stoptober?
Stoptober, just do a Google search. Dr. Google has the answer to this, although please don't forget, Dr. Google doesn't always have the answer.
And talking about Dr. Google, is it important to actually talk to people like yourself, the GP, rather than make up your own mind what's going on the internet?
Generally, it's absolutely essential. Please do not believe everything that's out there. Some of the stuff that's out there on social media is absolutely horrifying. In fact, we have very good evidence that people are more likely to listen to conspiracy theories if they are active in social media. But of course, you see, you know, we've got the Piers Morgans of this world who's out there, Piers Corbyns of this world who's out there saying that 5G causes coronavirus. It really, really, really doesn't. This is caused by a virus. We know a great deal about this virus. But where smoking cessation is concerned, you don't need to speak to your GP, but your practice nurse, your pharmacist or your GP can also give you advice and tips to help smokers quit, including what prescription medication might be right for you. But local stop smoking services are a good place to start. You really don't need your GP to tell you you need to quit.
Now, of course, nicotine is addictive, and people who are addicted find it very difficult to give up. What's your message to them?
It is possible. I know it's difficult. Every healthcare professional knows it's difficult, but there are lots of alternatives, and the most effective way to quit is with a combination of specialist support and stop smoking aids, and Stoptober can help you find that.
Sarah, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much indeed. Great pleasure, and good luck with everyone.
Chris was talking to Dr. Sarah Jarvis on a variety of topics. The first one being the COVID Track and Trace app, which is now available for download. If you want to find out more, you can go to a website, which is covid19.nhs.uk. That's COVID-19, which is COVID, figure 1, figure 9, .nhs.uk. And from that website, you can get advice about COVID-19, and you can also download the new app. Dr. Jarvis also talked about the Stoptober Stop Smoking campaign, which takes place in October every year. And again, you can find out more from an NHS website. The website is www.nhs.uk/Stoptober. And Stoptober is Stoptober. So it's the words stop and October run together. Stoptober. The website again, www.nhs.uk/Stoptober. And if you want to get a flu injection and you're over 65, your GP will be able to do it for you for free. And many pharmacies also offer the same service. So contact your local GP or your local pharmacy and they'll be able to help you out. Well, now the COVID-19 pandemic has certainly had a big effect on business in this country, and of course the people who are most at risk are probably small shopkeepers. To find out about it and what can be done to help, I spoke to Emma Jones, and I began by asking her if, in fact, small shopkeepers had been badly affected by COVID-19.
Indeed, Richard. And yes, small businesses have had it pretty tough for the past 6 months, but they've done us proud as a nation. So many businesses have pulled through. They've very quickly responded to what's been happening in the market. We've seen lots of businesses build websites to be able to reach their customers online. And research from Mercedes-Benz Vans is all around the more physical aspect of the business delivery. So how small business owners have kept on delivering products to customers.
Yes, the problem, I suppose, is that many small businesses wouldn't have had any online ordering and delivery facilities before all this happened.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, again, businesses have been, or those businesses that have come out of this have been those that were the fastest to respond. So absolutely, as you say, if there were businesses that were maybe shops on the high street where they were used to, of course, customers coming to them, what they've had to very quickly do is kind of say, well, we're still open for business, but we will now get the product to you. And so it's this picture of van driving business owners literally getting into their vans, getting onto the roads and getting those deliveries out to customers. And what that's resulted in is a stronger connection between business owners and their local community. And the local community are responding by buying more from local businesses, which, of course, is good news for every local area.
Yes, you've got the advantage. You can see the goods before you buy, and you can establish a relationship with your local trader, which you probably won't have with a large mail order company. So there's plenty of advantages from the point of view of the customer.
Absolutely. And customers, as you know, Richard, they like to buy from who they trust. And of course, it helps if they do know them. So this is where local companies have got that advantage. But certainly our advice to small businesses over the past 6 months has been to get all elements of the kind of customer experience right. So make sure you have got a good online presence. So if a customer is buying online, which of course most of us are now doing, that they can easily find your products, they know how to purchase them online, and critically that they do understand the delivery. So they know how quick it's going to get there, what the cost of that is going to be. So advice to businesses is make sure that online journey is correct, but of course definitely have that physical fulfillment at the end, because then the person who ends up happy from that is the customer, because they've got what they want in the time in which they wanted it. But of course that makes for happy business owners, because hopefully happy customers come back and shop again.
What can we as consumers actually do to support local businesses?
Well, I guess the most basic one is please buy more from them. So certainly kind of buy local. And I'm not saying or intimating from that, you know, you should buy from businesses just because they're small. Buy from businesses where you do appreciate the product and you think that there is a good customer service. So buy from local small businesses. And then, of course, another lovely thing that consumers can then do is then tell their friends. So for any business owner, it's almost a dream come true if they can perfect what's called word of mouth marketing. So if a business owner doesn't have to spend budget on marketing because the product and the delivery is so good that their customers tell all their friends about it, that for a business owner is the perfect sort of, you know, circle of success. So please continue buying. And also, if you have had a good experience from a small business, please tell everyone you know about it.
Yes, and I suppose the other thing is when you do go online to look for a particular product, not to just look at the websites of the big dealers, but to see if there are any smaller dealers near you who can also supply the product.
Yeah, and even though it's interesting, actually, Richard, we work very closely with Amazon, and you may know, well, of course, lots of people have been buying from Amazon. They have a big part of their business called the Marketplace. And actually, Amazon Marketplace is populated by thousands of small businesses. So it sometimes surprises people to know that over half of the sales that are made on Amazon, actually, those sales are going to small businesses who are using that platform to be able to reach their customers. So you can definitely find local small business owners with their own websites, but also quite often, even if you are buying from big platforms, it's actually small business owners who are fulfilling that order and they're getting that custom through the platform, which is good.
Yes, and indeed eBay do the same sort of thing, don't they?
Correct. That's, you know, these platforms have partly, you know, contributed to it being such an entrepreneurial country at the moment. So because they have enabled small businesses to reach customers, that's been a big reason why lots of people have started businesses and critically been able to grow them.
Okay, so the message for consumers like me is not necessarily to buy from a small business just because it's local, especially if it turns out to be much more expensive than somewhere else online, but to do your research thoroughly and make sure before you buy from a big trader there aren't small traders nearby who could serve you just as well.
Absolutely right. And hopefully small businesses will win your loyalty. So if they can deliver that product that you need in the time frame with a good, happy smile on their face, then hopefully you'll kind of come back for more. So as you say, research the market to see who the small businesses are. If they deliver, a good service, please consider rating them. So, of course, lots of online rating kind of ticks and kite marks that you can give now, and keep those purchases coming through.
Emma, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
Well, it's not only the proprietors of small businesses who are suffering from a reduction in trade due to the effects of the coronavirus, but many of their employees, especially the older ones, are very worried about whether they'll be able to keep their jobs once the furloughing scheme comes to an end, which happens sometime this month. And indeed, if they do have to find a new job, whether, in view of their age, they'll be able to do so. This has a knock-on, of course, for their pension savings, and that's a further source of worry, because they don't want to be left destitute in their old age. Well, help is at hand. The Legal & General Insurance Company have come up with the short course which they run with the Open University. It's on the subject of planning for retirement and maximising your income and savings in order to get the full pension. To find out more about it, I spoke to Emma Byron, who's the CEO of their General Retirement Income Department. And I began by asking her if it was true that many older people were worried about the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Our research suggests that over 41% of people over 50 are worried about job security as a result of COVID. An even higher percentage, so 58% of people, are worried about the impact the pandemic is going to have on their long-term savings. So it is a really worrying time for people in the over 50 age category.
And I suppose being over 50, they're less likely to be able to get another job.
Yes, and we do see that. So people over 50 who are unemployed are less likely. Only a third of them will return to full-time work again. So it's really important for people in this age category to think about what their options are and spend the time understanding what retirement might look like, planning for their retirement, so that they can hopefully get some peace of mind in these uncertain times. So we've come up with a range of resources to really help people to do that. So with Open University, we've created a course that will help people plan for their retirement. So it takes a couple of hours, various modules, and at the end you have a little test to check you've understood everything. You know, we have a retirement guide available for people. There's tools and calculators on our website and a series of podcasts. So I'd really encourage people, particularly when they're feeling anxious at the moment, to take that time to really think about retirement, plan for it, and hopefully having an understanding of that will give them some peace of mind and ways to think about how they might earn and what their income might look like once they do retire.
Well, it certainly sounds like a good idea. The only thing is that, of course, starting to plan for your retirement when you're in your early 50s might give you the impression that you're never going to get another job.
Yeah, well, I mean, hopefully people will. And I think the thing is to think creatively. You know, unemployment is a horrible thing to happen to people, but it can also be an opportunity to do something different. So, you know, we see a lot of people nowadays, retirement looks very different. People transition into retirement, they keep working, maybe part-time for longer, they might retrain. So I think, you know, if you are facing that, try to think a little bit more creatively about what else you might do to supplement your income. You could rent out a room in your house, you could do dog walking, babysitting, different things. So really use it as an opportunity to think about how the next phase of your life might look.
Yes, I suppose another point is that people who are on furlough are probably not getting as much income as they would be if they were actually working. So that'll be affecting their savings potential.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So obviously people are on reduced incomes as a result of the furlough scheme. And I would really encourage people where possible to still contribute into their pension. You know, it may be a way that people think, oh, I'll save some money, I'll stop my pension contributions. But that can have a big impact on your funds at the end and when you come to retire. So I'd really, really encourage people wherever possible to keep on saving into their pension.
Well, as somebody who is retired, I can certainly recommend that having a secure income in retirement is a great factor in your peace of mind. Why did Legal & General decide to get involved in this?
Well, I think what we've seen, and for a lot of our research, you know, sort of pre-COVID, we saw people just weren't engaging with retirement decisions. You know, it's a subject that scares people, that might seem a bit dry and dull. So people really were not engaging with it. And, you know, we feel really strongly that if we can help customers understand in clear, simple way, get rid of all of the financial jargon that, that people and insurers have been guilty of using, and help people understand their options, then they're going to make much better decisions about retirement. They're going to have much better retirements. And ultimately, that's what we're here to do with our customers, is help them achieve, happy, longer retirements. So that's absolutely why, from our perspective, helping educate customers is really, really important.
So you've come up with a retirement planning course with in conjunction with the Open University. Is it free?
Yes, absolutely. It's completely free for people to do. So if you want to have a look, if you go to the Open Learn platform and search for retirement planning made easy, then you'll find the course there. You can start it straight away, series of videos, quizzes, split into manageable chunks, so people can absolutely go and do that for free. I'd encourage you to do so.
And how long does the course last?
It takes up to 3 hours. You can do it faster depending how long you spend looking at all the videos, etc. But yet it's designed to be done in a couple of hours. So taking that time out of your day to do it, it will really help you to understand what options are available to you, and perhaps think about some things that you haven't previously considered. So really encourage people to give it a go.
And I assume that despite the fact it's provided by Legal & General, you're not being too pushy in recommending Legal & General's products.
No, not at all, not at all. We'd always encourage our customers to shop around. People shouldn't just stick with their existing pension provider. They should definitely shop around and look for the best deals. So it's not a product promotion. It's really about educating people on what their options are and what different products there are out there that people can take.
It sounds like an excellent idea. So congratulations on coming up with it. Emma Byron, thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
I was speaking to Emma Byron of Legal & General about their retirement planning course, which they're running in conjunction with the Open University. To find out more, you can go to the Open University website, which is www.open.edu/openlearn. That's www.open.edu/openlearn. When you get there, click on the heading that says Free Courses. And if you then do a search for retirement, you'll find the course. It's quite short, it only lasts about 3 hours, and it's completely free. Right, back over to you, Chris.
When you're watching television, do you listen to the music or do you watch the pictures, or perhaps both? Well, to tell us about TV music, David Lowe, music composer. Good morning, David.
Hi, Chris. How are you doing? Very nice to talk to you this morning.
So which comes first? Is it the chicken or the egg, or the music or the pictures?
I think from a viewer's point of view, it's all part of the overall experience, is that they all meld together and you don't notice one being dominant over the other, apart from if a piece of music's made for you to notice more. So I think it's part of the all enjoyment and experience of watching a show. I think they work hand in hand. Of course, title music, theme tunes are, a fantastic thing. They're the thing that draw you into the show. So they give you that familiar, nostalgic, warm thing that go, oh, the show's on. Let's sit down. Let's forget everything and watch the show, And so the theme tunes are brilliant part of that whole process, a part of the experience of your enjoyment of watching a TV show. And I think that's why we all enjoy some of the old nostalgic themes, because they take you back, childhood and whenever, when you just used to watch all those amazing shows.
Have you got a favourite?
Well, from those times, I mean, Sony's brilliant on Freeview, because they play some of those shows that I used to watch, that I used to love, actually. So Charlie's Angels, Starsky and Hutch. They did a survey, actually, of people and what they found about theme tunes and what people like about it. And it was that thing about nostalgia that people really latched onto. And the ones that people came, they did a survey, which ones were people's favorites. And actually MASH came up as number three on the survey. And in fact, it was a number one hit in the charts in 1980. And number one was Friends, which is good. I'll be there for you. Prince of Bel-Air was number two, and X-Files, do you remember the X-Files theme?
Yeah.
That was quite spooky, wasn't it, the X-Files? Starsky and Hutch was another one. And a lot of people actually said that, you know, it influenced their personality, you know, and how they grew up. And a lot of them, people still know the words to their favourite shows, you know. It's brilliant. So if you want to go back to it, just sit down in front of your telly on Freeview, get Sony Channel on, and you can go back to those times, you know. It's really good. MASH was a really good tune, actually. It was had that very sort of gentle, almost sort of wistful feel to it, which really set you in the mood for watching the programme.
And the words, of course, suicide is painless.
It was quite a sort of evocative, quite, you know, very sort of intense song, actually.
The time of the Vietnam War, wasn't it? What about your own theme tunes? Which is your favourite amongst them?
Well, I mean, I love them all, you know, because they come out, they sort of like your little kids, you know, that you sort of give birth to, and they go out into the world and they do their thing, you know. And it's lovely to know that, you know, what I'm trying to do is the same as those shows, you know, those Sony shows, that is that getting that nostalgia, getting that warmth and getting that sort of love into a piece of music so that people enjoy it and love it. For most of the entertainment shows I've done, the Factory of Entertainment, that's the idea. The news, I suppose, was a completely different kettle of fish in a way. So what you want, the BBC News, you still want people to know it and recognise it. But it's more about, it's just the sound that people hear that tells them that the news is on, you know. And so in terms of like the ones that I'm really proud of, I think the BBC News is one of the big ones, because I suppose I was a BBC fan when I was a kid and stuff. And so when they asked me to do it, it's about finding a sound that really evoked BBC and then the news, and that was instantly recognisable. As soon as you heard it, you'd know what it was. So we were talking about recognisable sounds, you know, that you heard, and they were talking about radio. And of course, the pip came up as a sound. Can you hear that there?
Yes, I can.
We were talking about the pip as a sort of recognisable sound. As soon as you hear that, you know it's a pip, don't you? It's a pip. So we were talking about recognisable sounds, and the pips were mentioned, and I thought, oh, maybe I could do the pips as a sound, and to make it completely different, I could add a dance beat to it, so like that, you know. And so started adding layers to it, then added a bass line, just like that. So that's just literally like three layers. You've got the bass line, you've got the drums and the pip. So from that, you know, instantly you've got a piece of music using the very simplest of elements. The more simple you can make it, the more direct, the stronger it is, you know, when people listen to it, because there's not a lot to actually process when they're listening. So you're just listening to the pips and the beat there. And then adding a few big drums to give it some sort of drama and authority, you know, which is you want from news. It was just finding a way of adding that thing, which the gravitas of the BBC, you know, because news is such a, emotionally, you don't want to be steered in one way or the other when you're watching. It's just simply about confidence and authority and, you know, clarity. And so I was just found two very simple chords that went over, that give you that emotional sort of hit without being too emotional, if you see what I mean. It's that authority and grandeur and gravitas of the BBC, seriousness, you know, dependability and reliability. So it's finding all those four elements just in that one sound. And then you have to sort of deliver the message in, like, you've only got 10 seconds for people to listen to it and understand it. And you have to start it and finish it. So, you know, so it's, tails away, and that gives the presenter a chance to sort of come in and talk over the top, so the music's not dominating. So all these things are just like elements that you put in. So in terms of making something that fitted the bill totally, I think the news is a good one for me. And also because, like I said, I was BBC so iconic, and I've been such a fan of it for years, that to create a sound that says this is the BBC was very exciting, and still is.
David, that's wonderful. Thanks very much indeed, and more power to your elbow.
Thank you very much indeed. Very good to talk to you.
We were talking to a man that actually writes television theme music. He was David Lowe, and he was telling us and demonstrating his art. Now, masks are mandatory, And is that causing a problem with facial recognition? We're so used to seeing people mouths and their general expressions. So to find out, joining us is body language expert Judy James. Good morning.
Good morning.
And just that, will masks prove a problem?
They will obviously prove a problem. And I think we've done some research on this, because if it's too much of a problem, people are either going to stop communicating, which is going to be tragic. I think it's very easy to put a mask on. I did it myself at the start. And you go out and you use eye cutoffs where you just look down. You stop speaking to people because you think that they won't hear what you're saying. So you lack that connection. And that would be a tragedy. Or, and I think worse than that, because they are so necessary now, people don't want to wear them. So they act like kids with a school hat or something. They take them off or they don't go out with them. And I think what we need to do is to look at the problems, maybe be a little bit forewarned and forearmed about them, and then think, well, you know, I can't smile with my mouth at people anymore. I might not be able to recognise people anymore. My speech might be a little bit less distinct. How can I compensate for that? How can I overcome it? Because it's so vital that we make tweaks to make sure that we're still going out being happy, or as happy as possible, social animals.
How does that affect people that are perhaps hard of hearing and they rely on seeing people's lips move? Not necessarily sign language, but that obviously helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was why when I did the work with Vistaprint, who make masks, one of the things, because we were looking at the ways that businesses can still do business, they can welcome their guests, that people who maybe have got what we've called logical problems, like being a bit hard of hearing, that everybody feels that it might not be perfect and there will be problems and there will be barriers and it won't be obviously as good as it was before the mask, but because they're necessary, that we are trying to do everything that we can to compensate. And I mean, it's not my remit, but I know that there are things like, I saw an app the other day where as you speak, it comes up in writing. I mean, my partner's partially deaf, so I do tend to take a notepad out with me anyway. But it's just making sure that people don't think that that means that they can no longer communicate. 75% of people in the survey said that they completely got the face masks and they would wear them and wear them with a good grace. And I think that's terribly important, because then the more people that we see wearing them and the more positive those people look, the more the people that have got a struggle or maybe just don't like them will feel that they will wear them. And as I say, with things like body language, I have a real problem with facial recognition anyway. So I just say hello to everybody. And I've been doing that for years. It's probably got me into trouble, but sometimes, you know, it just makes you look more cheery when you go out. It's not the worst thing.
And are older people likely to be more affected by this?
I think technically not. I think that in terms of the way that they feel, I know that when you're in lockdown, a lot of older people have been in by themselves. They haven't had the socialising that they would normally do. They may have not used all the sort of social media stuff that everybody else is using. I'm saying that, but, you know, I'd stand up for the fact that being older doesn't mean you can't use this stuff. But I know a lot of people will like to socialise when they go into shops and banks and things like that. I think that these companies do need to, and I'm sure they will get it, but they do need to compensate and understand that. I think they do. I've actually felt that I've got better greetings recently. A lot of people have put greeters on the door of shops and things than I would have done normally. And I think that the masks have caused a bit of an icebreaker where people will acknowledge other people a little bit more. So I would say it doesn't necessarily have to happen. And one thing I've noticed with when people are a bit older, because my hearing's not perfect as well, but you do tend to look at eyes and faces a little bit more. You have less inhibitions about doing it. So they'll probably be more comfortable at looking at the eye area than maybe people that are younger that have spent all their time poring over their phones as they walk down the road.
Absolutely. What about the question of masks? I mean, the government sent us mixed messages regarding masks. So are they essential and will they help?
I'm not a medical expert, but my decision has been personally that they are essential. Even if I'm working from gut reaction, if I was next to somebody on the train that I knew had got bad flu, Would I prefer them sneezing without a mask and breathing or in a mask? I would give them a mask and make them wear it, quite honestly. So my belief would be that, yeah, you know, we want to go out more. We don't want to stay locked in our homes. And if you're going to wear a mask, and that's quite a small price to pay. And evidently it's about 66 days, which is very precise, to create a new habit. And once we've created that new habit, as we did with social distancing, I don't know if you had it, I now leap back when anybody, even my husband, like, why? You know, I'm very, you know, the 2 meter rule. I don't offer to shake hands anymore. I do that naturally. And so the more we wear them, the more we get used to them.
Judy, that's wonderful. Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was psychologist Judy James telling us about face masks. Richard.
Yes, and that brings us to the end of this unusual programme where Chris and I are presenting equally. There'll be another edition of At Home This Morning in a fortnight's time, and I'll be presenting that one on my own. And it's a special about the forthcoming Brighton Early Music Festival. The festival has been taking place at the end of October, beginning of November, for about 10 years now. But because of the current pandemic and lockdown regulations and so on, it's not going to consist of live concerts any longer. All the items are going to be online and you can view them. I'll be having a look through what's on offer with the festival's director, Deborah Roberts, in my next edition. That's the aim of my next programme, to give you a sample of what is coming up and perhaps whet your appetite to actually listen to the concerts in full. And you can do so actually without having to pay anything.
That's even better. And you've been listening to At Home This Morning, and the programme is produced by Grey Matters Productions. And you can listen again to some of our older programmes by visiting our website.
And that website is www.greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's www.greymattersproductions, typed all as one word, .org.uk. When you get to the homepage, you'll find at the bottom there are links to 3 of the most recent programmes, and below that there's a button you can click on to bring up more programmes. Well, it's time for us to say goodbye now. So now it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. And of course, I'll leave you with my sign-off note. Keep safe. Bye for now.
See you next time. Bye.